Bueno, después de esta interesante exposición de Abdul, que estoy segura que nos va a dar pie para un no menos interesante debate, vamos a pasar a la exposición de Tony Monteiro, cuyo título no está traducido al español en el programa que tienen ustedes. Yo voy a intentar una traducción, sería Malcolm X y el Partido Comunista de los Estados Unidos, la confrontación del nacionalismo revolucionario y el marxismo-leninismo. Tony es miembro del Comité Nacional del Partido Comunista de los Estados Unidos y de su Comisión sobre Igualdad Afro-Norteamericana. Es profesor de Sociología en la Universidad de Rutgers en Nueva Jersey y ha estado activo en las luchas contra el apartheid y contra el imperialismo, así como en el movimiento negro norteamericano. Entonces, sin más, le paso la palabra a Tony Monteiro.
Thank you very much, and allow me to say good morning and to express my gratitude for the organizers of this symposium and to our Cuban hosts. I think this symposium is worthy of the man whose life and legacy it's concerned with. The scientific and critical evaluation of the life and work of Malcolm X is very important, not only because of who he was, but more because of the current situation in the world. I wish to address certain topical theoretical problems in the development of revolutionary nationalism and its proximity to Marxism-Leninism with respect to the national question. The reason that I have entitled my presentation Malcolm X and the Communist Party, the confrontation, or better, the interaction, my presentation Malcolm X and the Communist Party, the confrontation, or better, the interaction of Marxism-Leninism and revolutionary nationalism, is because I feel that there is a common terrain. This has to do with several things, including the fact that Malcolm lived and worked and struggled in the epoch of the transition from capitalism to socialism. The epoch when the struggle for national and social emancipation achieves its greatest successes. Malcolm, the genius that he was, but more the honest political fighter and revolutionary, was compelled to take into account the objective circumstances of the world in which he lived. In saying this, of course, one should be careful, and I think we all should be careful, not to exaggerate and to make of Malcolm what he was not. We can, for instance, suggest or hypothesize that given the direction or trajectory of his political thinking, that it is possible that he would have eventually embraced the communist objective. This is not unusual, of course. W.E.B. Du Bois, a Pan-Africanist, revolutionary nationalist, became, as you are all aware, eventually a communist. But prior to that, was an associate of the Communist Party and embraced, prior to joining the Communist Party itself, the communist objective. So there is at least this example to suggest that had Malcolm lived, that he too could have possibly become a Marxist-Leninist and a communist. However, the fact is, he was not. What we do know, however, is that Malcolm had distinct ideas about the national question and the fight for the national and social emancipation of the African American people in the United States. Views that developed and changed. To, I think, understand this theoretical development, it is useful to consider the development of the national question, the fight against racism and for racial and national equality of the African American people is developed by the Communist Party along with the Communist International. As is generally acknowledged, the Communist Party was the first party to treat the African American question as a national question and the struggle for equality as a national liberation struggle. The final consensus position with regards to the national question in our party appeared in 1928 and was developed after long study and discussion and struggle within our party and the Communist International. However, the revolutionary nationalist organization that existed in the early 1920s, the African Blood Brotherhood, from which several outstanding African American and Caribbean communists came, was also working on this problem. Among those who contributed to our understanding and final development of our position on the national question were outstanding figures like Claude McKay, James W. Ford, William Patterson, Harry Haywood, and George Padmore. The principal feature of the early presentation of the nationality question linked it to territorial autonomy. Hence, the territorial principle, the principle of land, the principle of autonomy was a critical and special feature of our understanding of the national question. The logic of this reasoning flows from the contextualization of the African American question, as understood at that time as a form or variant of the national colonial question, which in every instance was associated with the land question, land reform, and the peasantry. Obviously, one can already see a connection between our early thinking and formulation on the national question and that of Malcolm X concerning revolution, emancipation, and black equality. He, as you will recall, linked it to land. While holding the position of autonomy in the Black Belt, we also called for a struggle against racism and for equality outside of the Black Belt. This was important to the development of working class solidarity, for breaking down the barriers that excluded African American workers from industry, that had segregated the trade union movement. Now, I think what is most important is that as a consequence of the theorizing that went on in the 1920s and the program that emerged from it, our party was in a position to give leadership and develop truly historic initiatives in the fight against racism. I need only mention the case of Angelo Herndon, the Scottsboro victims, our development and We were among the first to campaign for the franchise in the South, the development of the Southern Negro Youth Congress, and so on. But the concept that the question of racial oppression of the African American people was a national question also led to the internationalization of the struggle by our party. For instance, if one studies the careers of the early communists such as Claude McKay, Cyril Briggs, William L. Patterson, James W. Ford, and others, they were acutely aware of the international connection and the need for internationalism in the fight for black equality. William L. Patterson, for instance, often spoke of the need to internationalize the African-American struggle. This is early as the late 1920s. It was this perspective that led to our party's initiatives and development on the question of the anti-colonial and anti-imperialist struggle in Africa, and our participation in the development and sustaining of the Council on African Affairs, which developed in the late 30s and early 1940s. Most significantly, it was the historic petition appearing after World War II, formulated by the great civil rights pioneer William Patterson, along with Paul Robeson and Dr. Du Bois and others, charging the United States with genocide against the African American people. Contextualizing this charge within international law and taking our case before the world community. Obviously, and though our scholarship is not yet adequate, obviously Malcolm responds to, embraces and synthesizes and moves forward much of this thinking. What is also important, I believe, is that not only were these basic tenets of our party's position held by our party, but they had become and have become generalized views that are held by broad masses of African Americans and other progressives in the United States. It was this milieu that produced a great part of Malcolm's thinking. Now, as is well known, our party in the late 1950s altered its position concerning the Black Belt Republic and autonomy in the Black Belt for African Americans. What is not so well known, however, is that the changed situation as a consequence of the Great Depression of the 1930s and the upsurge of the class struggle, in effect, had altered much of our thinking concerning territoriality as the principal question and land as the principal question of black equality and black liberation. W.E.B. Du Bois, early on, in fact in the 1930s, principally disagreed with the autonomy question as developed by our party. I consider his work, Black Reconstruction, to be an important theoretical critique of that position. If you recall, it is here that Du Bois develops the class principle as central as opposed to the territorial principle in his discussion of the black proletariat and a proletariat dictatorship in the Old South as the key to black liberation after slavery. Nonetheless, it was not until 1957 that our party formally and effectively changed its position, reflecting upon several important developments. The Great Migration after World War II, which effectively made of the Afro-American people the most proletarianized nationality within the United States. Ultimately, therefore, there was no answer to the question of black equality that did not find its place within the orbit of the class struggle and class unity. What we did, however, emphasize and continue to emphasize is the centrality of the struggle for African American liberation to the overall class struggle. Which briefly is to say that though there are many oppressed nationalities in the United States, the struggle for African American equality is crucial and central, in fact, strategic to the overall advance of the working class. Finally, just to summarize this part, Malcolm obviously, at least to me, was in a similar theoretical political place as is the Communist Party with respect to the national question. He moved from an emphasis upon land as its answer, five states in the South, autonomy, and other formulations. Finally, I believe, to a recognition, although not fully theorized, of the centrality of class to the resolution of the national and racial oppression of the African American people. Finally, I would like to address briefly some of the criticisms of our work, of the work of the party on the national question. A Cuban comrade asked yesterday the question, where was the Communist Party during the time of Malcolm's political career? A simple question, I think, but one which has many facets and certainly one which cannot be answered, at least in this presentation. One thing is clear, however. Many of our leaders and many of our major leaders on the national question were in prison, underground, or in exile. Some of the names are, of course, familiar to you. Benjamin Davis, Jr., William Patterson, Claude Lightfoot, Henry Winston, and others. This was not only a difficult and tragic situation for our party, but it, I think, created a difficult situation for the entire struggle for black liberation. One can only speculate about the benefit that Malcolm would have gained living in Harlem, being able to interact with a Benjamin Davis Jr., that experience, that mind, that theoretical experience, or a Henry Winston, or a William Patterson, or a Claudia Jones, these great communists. They were in prison, many of them, others in exile and underground. Much of what they had discovered was not available, not only to Malcolm, but to much of the generation inspired by Malcolm, which of course is our generation. The other thing was that after coming out of prison, our party was concerned with reestablishing itself in general, but also reasserting its organizational links to the African American people. Much of that had been destroyed, I should tell you. And in this respect, Ben Davis in particular, and others, saw as strategic. The Southern movement and the struggle against segregation and apartheid in the South, and did not look kindly upon Malcolm at that moment. We're talking the late 50s and early 60s. We did not understand fully, did not have enough contacts with him, with his movement, to fully understand everything that we needed to know about him, and thus overreacted, I believe, to much of his criticisms of the Southern movement. In fact, if one studies our party literature, there is very little analysis or discussion of Malcolm X. This does not, however, mean that our party always has a knee-jerk negative reaction to nationalism. It never has, nor does it at this period. We have always differentiated between revolutionary, or what we have often called anti-imperialist nationalism, and national exclusivity, sometimes referred to as cultural nationalism. In this period, our party documents refer to the nationalism of the oppressed as, in most cases, progressive and revolutionary. Nonetheless, there have been difficulties and continue to be difficulties in the coordination of activity between our party and the nationalist movement. The final point is this. We are abundantly or first concerned with the overall class struggle. Why is this? This is because strategically our program is rooted in the fight to overthrow capitalism and our understanding that the working class is the only class in alliance with the African American people capable of doing that. The second point is that we believe that the African American people, who are highly working class, have no option but to align itself with the general class struggle, and vice versa. The working class has no option but to align itself with the African American people. Well, this is the substance of my thinking and what I would like to contribute. I would only like to tell you that I know I have gained immensely already, and I think that this symposium and the thinking will be reflected very much in our party's work, in our party's press, and in their documents. So once again, I would like to express my profound appreciation for this opportunity.